Ireland entered into its first lockdown on March 12, 2020, after the arrival of COVID-19 to our shores. With it came the closure of bars and music venues across the country, and ground to a halt the Irish live music industry, affecting thousands of musicians. This 10-part documentary series will tell the stories of 10 such musicians. Some will have had to completely adapt how they perform in a new virtual era, whilst for others they found their services became even more important. Each story is unique and compelling and shows where their love of music began and the resilience of the East Cork music community. After 2 years of lockdowns and restrictions, a new live music landscape has emerged. So can the grassroots musicians of a community filled with musical talent bounce back from the day the music died? Singer-songwriter and guitarist Wayne McSweeney is a well-established musician in the East Cork area. Now, Wayne is accompanied by singer-songwriter and guitarist Caroline Sweeney.
In terms of music, in 1975, when my mother arrived home with Glen Campbell's Greatest Hits, and shortly followed by Jim Reeves' Greatest Hits, I thought they were the best thing ever. Oh my God, the Glen Campbell stuff with Jimmy Webb, by the time I get to Phoenix, even Rhinestone Cowboy, you know. And that's where it kind of all began for me. And then Elvis, I remember the day Elvis died, my mother came into the kitchen crying. And it was like, she didn't even know Elvis. What's this about? And then I began to understand through radio about the power of music and what it did. And it became my greatest friend through the 70s, 80s and 90s. And that's kind of where it began. I remember even in the 80s, because when I started to become kind of conscious of the power of it, punk had started. And we couldn't really hear the Sex Pistols or any of that stuff going on. But there was a rock show out of England, Tommy Vance. I don't know if you remember Tommy.
Hi there, this is Tommy Vance. Welcome to the Friday Rock Show.
And I could, on a Friday night, I could barely tune in the radio. There was mountains of static, but emerging from the static was this voice and this music. And I would sit there for hours, retuning and going forwards and backwards. And I remember one time we were on holidays in Garryvaugh, sitting in a wheelbarrow outside at 11 o'clock at night with a radio. I made sure there was batteries in it and tuning it in. And that, for me, was where I came from. I think, for me, if something was that important and had that kind of draw, then for me it had a power and it was something that I wanted to be involved in. That was kind of where I came from. And I remember writing to Jim O'Neill. He was a daytime producer on RT, or a DJ on Radio 1, whatever it was. And it was in the days when you'd have to write and it would take 3 or 4 days to get to Dublin. And then they'd sort through them all. But I had written a letter about wanting more rock, and he played it. Yeah. Or he read out my letter. And at the time, around that time, Motorhead had released some stuff. And I was a huge Motorhead fan because it was the heaviest, loudest thing I could get my hands on. And he read out my letter and he played the Ace of Spades. And I remember feeling, oh my God, this national radio. It was fantastic. And years after I got to meet him, I got to play with him. He didn't remember it. But to me, you know, it was such a defining moment. But yeah, there was very few things that we could listen to. And then, of course, pirate radio. But they didn't play the kind of stuff that was, you know, outside of the mainstream stuff. But yeah, that early radio was so, so important. My friend Declan, his brother had a guitar, and I was mad to learn. You know, over the years I'd gotten guitars and things off people and modified them, like cut them in half so they'd look like something I'd seen on the telly. But he lent me his nylon string guitar and I taught myself. And then one day his brother arrived at my front door and knocked on the door and he says, I've come to collect my guitar. And I was broken hearted. So I handed him the guitar, I'll never forget it. And he stood there looking at me with the guitar, and my mother handed him £10. Welling up now. And he handed me back the guitar and that was it. And then I just locked myself away for months. And the first song I played for my brother Gary, and it was Lay Lady Lay by Bob Dylan. So I sat down and I said, Gary, come here, come here. listen, listen. So I sat down and I played it, and he goes, what's that? And I said, it's Lay Lady Lay by Bob Dylan. He says, no, it's not. That's rubbish. And he walked out. So I had my first heckler back then. So when your brother tells you you're rubbish, it doesn't matter what anybody else says. You just kind of move forward with it. And then it was, there's always been a great music scene around here in East Cork and Cork and in Ireland at that time as well. You know, U2 had broken, so there was a focus on Ireland and Irish bands and things. And we thought, you know, if four lads from Dublin can do it, then, you know, somebody from East Cork can do it. And I just started learning and playing and writing, and you know, my writings were based hugely around kind of storytelling stuff and concept albums. I loved like Welcome to My Nightmare by Alice Cooper. War of the Worlds was the greatest thing we'd ever heard, and the narrative that ran through that. The Wall came out at that time, so there was this incredible tapestry of music that we all had access to, and it was, you know, that whole thing of going to Cork to buy a record, going into a record shop, picking it up, taking the vinyl out, holding it up to the light, making sure there was no scratches on it, reading the cover, you know, finding out who the producer was, the names of the songs, if there was any art in there. And so it was back then in the 80s, and I decided that was going to be my means of expression. A lot of it was by ear and by when our friends would have parties, because you had a guitar, you'd be invited. Knowing that we didn't know a huge amount of songs, you'd kind of stumble through it and you'd figure out some of the rules. Also, Mick Crowley was very good in that Mick would allow you into the shop with a notebook, and he was really supportive. And you could write down the words, or if you had the words, you could just write down the chords. And then he would kind of explain to you about transposing them and things. Like, he was another incredible resource, very generous man. Obviously, he has a huge history as well. And then anybody we came across, you would ask them as well, because everybody was really supportive about sharing information. And that's the one thing I think that kept me going back then, is that no matter where you're at, there was always somebody who was above you who was interested in pulling you up to their level. Yeah, so a lot of it was kind of word of mouth, sitting down, you know, listening to the radio, recording the songs on that little cassette with the red button and the white button, and you would play along until you got it, which I think is stood to us now, because, you know, you'll get somebody to come up and sing and they'll go, do the Blanket on the Ground, and it's like, okay, you know, 5 minutes ago I played Nirvana, now I'm going to do, I think it was a Crystal Gayle song, but you know what it is, because you would have played it, or you'll say, okay, let me get your key, what do you mean? So it's I suppose it's like learning a craft, and it's the same as being a carpenter, you know, or a welder coming, you know. It's just it brings you to a different place where you have this knowledge as well that's been passed down by travelling up and down to Cork from Mick Crowley, from all the other musicians who were around us, and they would offer that to us, which is really, really nice.
I think what I learned with my mother was to have a really good ear, like Wayne said, being able to kind of, you know, someone sing a song and be able to play along, or being able to change to different keys and things. My mother, I'd say herself, she was a bit fairly basic guitar player, but she had a beautiful voice and a great ear. And when I was about 14, she gave me a beautiful classical guitar, her own guitar. It was, I still have it, a Yamaha. And she was trying to encourage me to practice. And she came in one day and she had this all prepared in her head. She said, Caroline, she said, you're not really practicing, so that guitar was very important to me. I'm going to have to take it back. And I said, wait a minute, look at all the things I'd learned. I'd gone off by myself and gone through a chord book and learned all my major chords and minor chords and sevenths, and I was after passing her out. And she turned around and she said, in the same conversation, she said, that's it, you're going to lessons. So she sent me to Cork to do lessons with a jazz guitarist, Liam Foley, who'd be very well known in the music scene, and he passed away recently and is sorely missed. So kind of started from there, really, I suppose, the actual really immersing myself in learning. Lots of patience and practicing things and no YouTube, yeah.
L is for the way you look at me. O is for the only one I see. V is very, very extraordinary. E is even more than anyone that you adore and love, is all that I can give to you. Love is more than just a game for two. Two in love can make it. Take my heart, don't break it. Love was meant for me and you. La, 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 la. L is for the way you look at me. O is for the only one I see. V is very, very extraordinary. E is even more than anyone that you adore and love, is all that I can give to you. Love is more than just a game for two. Two in love can make it. Take my heart, don't break it. Love was meant for me and you. Love was meant for me and you.
I was in several bands, so we were always looking for venues and things to play. In the 80s, there's a band called Ad Astra, and we would have kind of played alternative venues. We would have played Lep when Paddy McNichol ran it, and another gem, an incredible man. The Meeting Place in Middleton. So we would have, and then as we got older and things became more difficult, we formed bands, or wedding bands and things like that. So it would have been, you know, you could, in wedding season, you might have done two or three in a week. There were always the smaller bars where you'd play as well. So you knew kind of in advance, nearly 2 years, what you were doing. So you could have, you know, obviously from January to March, things are kind of quiet, but you'd be tipped, you know, you might have won two or three a month, but past March, then it could be three or four or five. And then sometimes it could be two a day. And that was right up to COVID. There was lots, we have a great history of it here, so the bars would have music. So you were always booked, you were always busy, you were always going somewhere. You were always looking at gear, to buy new gear. What's the newest thing? What's the latest thing? What can I buy that second hand that could be the latest thing? But it was just, it was full on. And there was tons of places to play, and there was lots of people coming out. And then it stopped. Because I was booked to play in the Blackbird in Ballycotton with Mossy. And a couple of days up to that, because the week before that, I'd played in a bar in Cork, and it was full of Italians and nurses. And those were the two groups that the media were reporting were the most contagious. And I remember sitting there going, oh, God. As somebody had said, these are Italians. And in came a bunch of nurses, and it was like, oh, I shouldn't be here. That was on a Thursday. A couple of days later, I think the following week, was due to play of Paddy's Day in the Blackbird. And I remember 2 days beforehand going, because of the hysteria that was starting to mount, calling Mossy, going, I have to cancel, I can't do this. And that was that. And Mossy was, you know, I think we were all in the same boat. And I was like, that's okay. And then, yeah, we thought, oh, it'll be a few weeks, you know, let me know about it, we'll be back, I'll just learn a couple of new songs and we'll see how it goes. And then that was it. Darkness. I always wanted to record an album of my own stuff, and I had this one written, so I thought this is a good opportunity to do this. So I went to a friend of mine, Dave, and he had a small studio, and I said, I have this idea, can I just put down rough demos? And that's what I started to do, put down demos for 10 songs of this one night that I spent in San Francisco, and the people that I had met there, and what their stories were. So it was, I guess, then my opportunity to do something other than sit at home and feel sorry for myself, because as musicians, even though a lot of us live with or present with really low self-esteem, and we need that applause. There's nothing like it. You get the feedback from people and it carries you to the next one. That was gone. So where would that, we all need that. But as artists and musicians, we have something that can only be, that you have to share with people. And if you don't share it, then what do you do with it? How do you get any feedback? So that's what I had started to do, because there were no gigs there. And there was no prospect of gigs there. The online thing didn't appeal to me really, because we weren't getting that feedback, and I'm a huge believer in likes and those things, because it just seems to be so, it's so passive. People just go yes, and there's nothing to it, because it never translates in my own head to sales or to people coming to gigs and things like that as well. In my own head, I had to do something different. So I recorded an album over the 2 years.
I remember it was a few days before St. Patrick's Day, and I was booked to play on Patrick's Day in Antibiddies in Cloyne, which is now The Rock. And just that, there was a fierce, ominous feeling there. I had been playing in Wallace's a few days before, and even then very conscious, I suppose, because we didn't know what we were dealing with, of just that close contact with people, or people coming up and shaking your hand and that kind of thing. And just I kind of guessed that it was going to fall through within the announcement. Yeah, I think initially, like a lot of people, I enjoyed the kind of downtime, you know, without getting out of the, I suppose, the rat race a little bit of life, you know. And I threw myself into songwriting, which was something I had kind of been putting on the back burner. So creatively, it was actually a really good time for me. I wrote a lot of songs during that period. And also kind of towards this was the second year of the lockdown, I decided that I wanted to go back and study music. So I signed up for the Cork Academy of Music, which at the time was online. It's a facility on the North Monastery Road, but they thought that they'd be partly online maybe the following year and partly in person. They weren't sure, but it ended up being all in person. So yeah, it kind of brought me back, I suppose, that time of thinking what I wanted to do. I realised I wanted to better myself as a musician, really, and as a songwriter. And as a result, I've been studying music again for the last couple of years full time.
Hey little bird, why are you so sad? Ain't this the best life you ever had? If you fly away, I'll be mad. Stay, Robin, stay. Hey little bird, why don't you sing? One for the fisher and one for the king. Seize the day, let us all in. Stay, Robin, stay. Fly, Robin, fly, past the moon and on through the sky. Stay, Robin, stay. At the end of the day I saw you broken. Your song was more than just a token. I heard you sing the sweetest song. Why you seem so low? Follow me around, I'll take it slow. Sing me your troubles, got nowhere to go. Stay, Robin, stay. Hey, little bird, why am I so sad? This is the hardest winter you've had. You flew away and I didn't get mad. Fly, Robin, fly. Fly, Robin, fly. Fly, Robin, fly. Yeah, mine came from, and Caroline's as well, is that we absolutely love it. And to take something that important away from you, or even to begin to look at it with no hope or disdain, I think for me is just unimaginable. There's always going to be music. You open the window and you can hear the birds in the morning. You know, even the rhythm of cars, the rhythm of a washing machine. There's always somebody walking around singing or whistling. Very often I hear Roger Whittaker whistling. So it's, and again, it's well, for me, I just couldn't imagine it. But I can imagine, you know, a lot of my friends and things as well did look at it, who were at it full time. And that was gone. And that's your whole livelihood gone. I was lucky in that I had a different livelihood.
I think one of the things I found really hard was, you know, with the restrictions, I missed the gigging very much. But also just being able to play music with other people was really difficult when you weren't allowed to see anybody. And trying to make that work online using things like Zoom and online platforms, and it just didn't work because there's a latency there, so that one person's music is a little bit behind the other person's, and I missed that collaboration with other people.
But even sitting in a space together with people, outside of the computer stuff, there's something happens. You know, you'll often hear the great duos and things talk about what they receive from the other person as well, and how that informs what they do and how it improves what they do, and also how they love it, you know. So I suppose if it were to happen, hopefully it will never happen again, but even if it were, I'll take the same mindset in there and find a way to make it work, however that is, you know.
Dearest Michelle, hope you don't mind that I found out your name. I know that you go by Cherie when you move in those stiletto shoes, when you're dancing for dollars on stage. I hope you were well. As I sat there last night, I could see you've been hurt by the look in your eye, though I have to confess, I am quite lost for breath when you're dancing for dollars on stage.
I want to take you far from the grip of this worn out, broken downtown. I want to feel your breath on my skin till the dark gives birth to the dawn.
I know, dear Michelle, that it's hard to be strong when you're trying to survive in this world all alone. But tonight I'll be there as you lay yourself bare when you're dancing for dollars on stage.
I want to take you far from the grip of this worn out, broken downtown. I want to feel your breath on my skin till the dark gives birth to the dawn.
I know a place nobody goes, at the edge of a lake that's surrounded by woods. And when I take you there to that fresh mountain air, you will dance in the moonlight just for me.
And again, just to go back a small bit, before lockdown, I'd seen Caroline play, and I went, and I found myself singing along harmonies and things of what she was doing. I went, ooh, that's interesting. And so we did one gig together with a drummer in the Blackbird in Ballycotton before lockdown, and that was really nice. Then lockdown happened and there was nothing. But then, so when things started to lift, we did a small residency in the yacht club in Crosshaven. And so we started doing things there, and then, you know, playing with the ideas of different songs and harmonies and that. So that was the early days, but it was during the day, so we had to walk in with masks. Now, we were able to play outdoors because they had, I think everywhere had an outdoor space to play. So it was hopeful, and it was also, I'd say if you'd have played Baby Shark for people, they would have clapped and gone, yes, live music, we hate that song but we love this. And we did play Baby Shark, and some other stuff. So it was those early gigs from 4 to 6. So it was like as if we were under 18 again and we were allowed into bars, but you can only play in this time. And it was like, yeah, but the enthusiasm was incredible. And to see people's faces smiling, and, you know, people would come up to you and they'd nearly forget they're going to touch you, and they go, oh, no. And then we'd make jokes about, you know, people coming up to sing, and you go, no, you can't. And everybody got it. How different songs and things came, it took on a different life, like Sweet Caroline, you know, hands touching hands. You'd see people go, okay, we can't. Yeah. But we knew that that was going to disappear once people could again get back together. So that happened over a space of time. So I think that was like October. Was it October? Not last year. The year before, I think. I my sense of time has gone completely out the window. Like, it's like my internal clock is fried. So whenever they said we can start going out was then. I can't remember the exact time, but I remember all the events.
I remember the first gig that I played in. I was on my own, a solo gig, in the beer garden in Wallace's when they started up the live music, having had none for 2 years. And it was still outdoors in the back, but the beer garden was covered over and it was full. It was a Sunday evening and all the covered area and the outdoor area was full. And people had to sit at their tables. You couldn't stand, you couldn't walk around. It was very restricted. But everybody was listening and everybody was singing. And there was just, it was such a great feeling, you know. People really, really enjoyed the music. And I'd say I could have sat there and banged two pots together and I would have had the same reaction. It really had nothing to do with me. It was people just celebrating, being able to hear music and be able to be a part of it again, you know. I think there's a new appreciation there now for live music. I know now we're getting into kind of, you know, normality again or whatever that is now. There was a time, you know, during COVID when I really didn't know what people were talking about. Was this the end of live music? You know, there was that doubt there. Would there be any more gigs? Would there be any more concerts? Do you know, would things have changed so much? Would the market for it be gone? And I don't think it's been the case at all, because we've been very busy, you know, even at a time of year now, kind of between Christmas and St. Patrick's Day, which is normally very quiet. We've been really, really busy. And there's a great appetite there, I think, for our music again.
We need more women out there playing, because there aren't a huge amount of them. There's a couple of young lads coming up around East Cork who were brilliant. And they remind me of, you know, us in the 70s and the 80s getting out there doing it. And people looking at them going, whoa, they're doing something different. It is there. And again, you know, if they have, you know, if they work with the bars, and get the advertising and stuff that they need, if they're surrounded by people who have their best interests at heart and would look out for them. Also, you know, so you let them explore the danger of being a musician very carefully or under supervision. And, you know, let them fail. Let them have a really bad night where nobody listens and they feel terrible, because that's part of it. Let them have a night where everybody thinks they're the greatest thing in the world and they should be signed to the biggest record company in the world. But I, in my own head, I think it's there. Young people also are not cynical. As we get older, we become kind of cynical and we give up on hope and the idea. I suppose those of us who are dreamers remember that back to when we listened to Tommy Vance on the radio and the possibility of things, U2 on Saturday morning telly. And you, if you hold on to that, and it's not that you're codding yourself or anything, it's that remember why you got into it and keep doing it for that, the love of it and the importance for you to express yourself. And that would be what I would say to most young people, love it. Regardless, there could be 2 people there, but they could be the 2 greatest people in the world. There could be 1,000 people there and they won't listen. So you never know. But keep doing it and don't become cynical.
Just as regards, you know, the future and up and coming young artists and writers and those of us who are at it already, I think a lot will depend on the radios and giving airtime to Irish artists and Irish songwriters. So this is a wonderful opportunity, what you're doing here now, giving this platform to local musicians. But I think it has to be across the board that there has to be a certain amount of airtime for Irish artists, and not just the big international artists. I think it's the only way really, to have this industry really survive and thrive.
I once had a girl, or should I say, she once had me. She showed me her room, isn't it good, Norwegian wood. She asked me to stay and she told me to sit anywhere. So I looked around and I noticed there wasn't a chair anywhere. I sat on a rug, biding my time, drinking her wine. We talked until two, and then she said, it's time for bed. She told me she worked in the morning and started to laugh. I told her I didn't and crawled off to sleep in the bath for a laugh. And when I awoke, I was alone, this bird had flown. So I lit the fire, isn't it good, Norwegian wood.
The Day the Music Died was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland under Sound and Vision programming to support the live music sector.